We begin our weekend broadcasting, and next in our series to mark Radio Prague's 80th birthday, we feature a recording made in the summer of 1946, when Radio Prague was exactly 10 years old. A.J.P. Taylor was one of the best-known and respected historians of mid-20th century Britain, and on a visit to Czechoslovakia, he predicted a future for the country that would combine pluralist parliamentary democracy with communism. David Vaughan has more.
In the first post-war democratic elections in July 1946, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia emerged as the strongest political force. They did not have an overall majority, but were the biggest single party in a new coalition government, led by their party leader, Clement Gottwald. This was still 18 months before Gottwald led the political coup that swept away the entire non-communist opposition, and in the West, many on the left saw developments in Czechoslovakia as a model of democratic socialism. One was the British historian A.J.P. Taylor, who came to Czechoslovakia just after the 1946 vote. He gave a talk to Radio Prague.
This is A.J.P. Taylor speaking to you from Prague. It's a strange feeling for an Englishman to be talking again from Prague and to realise that after all these years of darkness, something has come right in the world and that not all the hopes of the years of war have proved barren.
A.J.P. Taylor was famously anti-fascist and staunchly left-wing.
Anglo-American University student George Phillips puts the recording into context.
So his views were that the rise of communism was a positive thing and that despite their defeat in the Second World War, Germany remained the biggest threat to Europe at that time.
There's still the euphoria after the liberation of most of Czechoslovakia by the Red Army. But is there any reference or fear of the influence of Stalinism in Czechoslovakia at the time?
There doesn't appear to be. Taylor seems to be pretty convinced that communism is the way to go. And he seems to think that that will be a purely good thing. And he encourages the Czech people to support the new government and the alliance that's forming between Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union. So he seems very in favour.
I came here too late to see the elections, but I've been all over the country and talked with people of all classes, and I can say this without any fear of contradiction or any shadow of a doubt. This was really a free election. It was conducted with a spirit and with high arguments of which any country in the world could be proud. And now with the new government, Czechoslovakia is starting on an experiment which is of the greatest interest for every democratic country. For the first time in any country, there is a communist prime minister who has reached his position by strictly democratic methods. On the other hand, this isn't a communist government, it's a coalition. The communists haven't got a majority in the parliament. They're the biggest single party, and even if they haven't got the power, they have, I think, the biggest share of the responsibility. That's an important difference. It means that in future the communists are going to be blamed if things go wrong instead of being able to blame others. And they're going to have to use their popularity not to make difficulties, but now in order to get things done. It was a novel experience to hear a communist prime minister say, as I did the day before yesterday, that the period of nationalisation was over and that now the people must get down to hard work. In fact, in power, the communists look very much like any other patriotic politician, overwhelmed with practical problems and anxious to do the best for their country. There will, of course, be plenty of disputes between the parties. In fact, there are already. They agree, roughly, broadly, generally, on economic matters. They're not so likely to agree so easily, so completely, on, say, questions of education, on the organization of the youth. But it looks very much as though the parties will stick together in order to overcome the economic difficulties which are facing the country.
Looking back exactly 70 years later, how did you feel? What insights did it give you into the time?
Well, with hindsight, I can't say that he was anything other than totally wrong in his predictions, but it was interesting to see the left-wing view of that time of what the benefits of communism might be for Europe, and also to see how people of Europe felt threatened still by Germans following their domination of the war.
The whole of Czech industrial life was geared into German economy. And now, if Czechoslovakia is to maintain its present high standard of life, the Czechs have got to find new outlets for their industrial capacity. That's the explanation of the trade agreement with Russia. And the best service that Western countries could do to Czechoslovakia would be to get trade with the West going again on a big scale. What's even more important for the Czechs is that the neighbouring countries should recover a certain amount of order and prosperity. Czechoslovakia can't go on indefinitely as a prosperous, democratic island surrounded by countries in confusion and collapse. On every frontier of Czechoslovakia, there's hunger and dictatorship. Sometimes the dictatorship of an occupying power, sometimes of a political party. Very little is left of the little Entente, which gave Czechoslovakia an outstanding position 20 years ago. The Czechs are on bad terms with the Poles, who are still demanding the district of Teschen, the district which Colonel Beck seized in collaboration with the Germans in 1938. Not surprisingly, the Czechs reject everything connected with Munich, not merely the surrender of territory to the Germans, but to the Poles as well. The Poles, on their side, carry on agitation about Teschen, I think, to compensate themselves for the loss of territory in the east. And in exactly the same way, the Hungarians are demanding a revision of the Slovak frontier, in order perhaps to compensate themselves for having got nothing in Transylvania. I don't think that either the Poles or the Hungarians will get anything for their agitation. But as long as it goes on, it's a bar to peaceful cooperation.
At that time, 1946, it was just when the Sudeten Germans in Czechoslovakia were being expelled. Does he mention that?
He does. He says it's impossible now for Germans to remain in Czechoslovakia, given the 7 years of totalitarianism that the Czech people had just suffered at the hands of the Germans.
No one who's seen and heard what the Germans did in this country can doubt that it's impossible now to keep Germans here as citizens. This terror wasn't the act of a few SS men. It was really the expression of the spirit of a whole people. The Germans have to go. But their transfer is being organized as decently and as humanely as possible. And all the same, the great majority of Czechs don't like it. They don't like the whole thing. They feel that it's a defeat for the principles which they try to defend. A defeat imposed upon them by Hitler, but a defeat all the same. They're ashamed, as we in England were ashamed, at many of the methods which we had to use in order to win the war.
In the previous programme in this series, we went back to the weeks just after the liberation of Czechoslovakia in 1945 and saw how Czechs remained haunted by a fear of Germany. AJP Taylor's talk reminds us just how huge a factor this was in determining Czechoslovakia's policy, both towards Germany and the Soviet Union, in the years after the war. Taylor says that Czechs will be willing to pay any price not to face a revival of German aggression. Little did most Czechs realise quite how high a price their country would end up paying.
One terrible shadow hangs over the land, comes into people's lives, it takes away any real feeling of security. And that shadow is the problem of Germany. The Czechs have had 7 years of German occupation, and they'll pay any price not to have it again. That's the reason for the Russian alliance, which is supported by everyone in the country, of whatever class and whatever party. As the Prime Minister said in his speech the other day, the Russian alliance is for us not merely a question of safety, but even of existence. If a great Germany is ever restored, Czech democracy and Czech independence will again be lost. The Czechs are at a loss to understand the policy of Great Britain and the United States in Germany. They feel that in the anxiety to feed the Germans and make them capable of standing on their own feet, the real German problem is being forgotten. The Western powers really care for democracy east of the Rhine. They must end for good and all the possibility of a new German aggression. Democracy can only flourish in conditions of security. And Czechoslovak democracy will only survive if the shadow of Germany is removed forever. It seems to me it's up to us, democratic countries of the West, not to let this democratic people down for the second time.
The irony of Taylor's words is enormous.
The events of the following few years were to show that dictatorship is not a matter of the DNA of a particular nation. Germany changed, and by a tragic irony, it was the Soviet Union, the country that had sacrificed more than any other for the liberation of Czechoslovakia, that was to deprive the country of the pluralist democracy so much praised by Taylor. Just 18 months after the British historian's visit to Czechoslovakia, on the 25th of February 1948, the Communist Party leader and Prime Minister Clement Gottwald staged what amounted to a bloodless coup, pushing non-communist ministers out of the government and ultimately leaving President Edvard Beneš with no choice but to resign. None of this would have been possible without the conspicuous behind-the-scenes support of Stalin's Soviet Union and its agents in Czechoslovakia. By May 1948, Czechoslovakia had a new constitution, defining the country as a people's democracy under the leadership of the Communist Party.
That was David Vaughan with the latest edition of our special series marking the 80th anniversary of Radio Prague.